We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now with our Need to Know, brought to you by our good friends at Easton Roofing, my buddy Joe Spiker and his team.
One of those days.
Sometimes. I think it's the temperature being, you know, hot and cold, now hot again, is getting to me.
Doing that too.
Listen, I'm not going to joke. We all sat here and like, hey, every time you get a little sniffle, you're like, eh, is that COVID?
You know,
is
dude.
It, that what I got? You,
every.
Can
I smell things? Can I taste things?
I definitely tasted my turkey sandwich from the delicatessen at Hen House.
So good. I was so jealous.
Love to my friends at Hen House, the turkey and Havarti sandwich, one of my favorites. Joe Spiker and his team at Easton Roofing, they're one of my favorites as well. Thought I was going to get a whole re-roof. Not happening. Not right now, anyway. Probably going to have to happen at some point. Joe Spiker and his guys will be the ones that do it for me. Easton Roofing gets you back to business, gets you back to life faster by giving you all the options you need to know. Sometimes there's nothing but a re-roof that's going to fix it. Sometimes a repair, maybe a temporary repair that can get you by for a couple of years, maybe put off that cost for a little bit. Other times you can't. That's why Easton Roofing offers many, many financing options, making it easier for you to get that project done. Lenders competing means you save money. Never seen lower rates than what are going on right now. Check out their incredible Google reviews. Angie's List Super Service Award winner, Best of Houses Award winner for four straight years. That's Easton Roofing. Find them online at EastonRoofing.com. Let's get things started with a little Royals news. Why not, right? We've got Alec Lewis coming up, so we'll start with the Royals news. Announcing today that Lonnie Goldberg and Danny Ontiveros have both received promotions within the club's baseball operations department. Goldberg will serve as the vice president of player personnel, which I believe was J.J. Pecola's title previously, and Ontiveros will become the club's scouting director. So there you have it.
Everyone moves one seat to the right.
Yeah, including Edward Olivares, who I guess moves one seat to the left. He's been optioned to make room for Michael A. Taylor.
He knows the way.
Michael A. Taylor activated from the bereavement list.
We got so. Michael A. Taylor!
Edward Olivares has got to be wondering what his future is, right?
I would think.
We'll find out what Alec Lewis thinks that.
Apparently it's driving.
That.
It's like he might as well get a sponsor and join the circuit, man.
Yes.
if he's going to drive that much, he might
Bill
as well
Pecota
get paid
was I-29. I mean, he's the new I-29 because he has been up and down for this ball club all year long. Let's give you some Travis Kelce. He was talking this morning on ESPN. He said he and his teammates are happy to hear that Andy Reid has bounced back.
I've heard he's doing better. I've heard he's also got back into the building, and you know, that's all we can hope for is that he's doing all right. We'll fix everything on the football field. We got a lot of great leaders in the building, and it matters to a lot of guys that we've brought in here in KC. So I think you know, health is always number one. We gotta be healthy, and we gotta be feeling like ourselves. And I'm just glad that I heard that Coach Reid is back in the building.
All right, so good to hear from Travis Kelce on that front. He went on to say this morning on ESPN that Andy Reid means a lot to every player in that locker room.
Outside of everything going on, you know, and you never want to hear anybody's going to, you know, take a trip to the hospital, even if it is for precautionary reasons. You know, that's our leader, man. That's our guy. We don't go if Coach Reid isn't there. Or, you know, it's been a pleasure my first 9 years. Being able to get to learn from such a great leader, such a great football mind, and you know, I'm forever thankful for what he's been in my life, let alone on the football field. So you never like to hear things like that, and your first thoughts just go to the family and everybody around, and you know, you want to show them support and show them love that, you know, everybody's out here thinking of you.
I agree, and that is first and foremost the health of Andy Reid, and the fact that he's back in the building is a good sign. You know, listen, I'm just going to add, I think there's a lot of us that are concerned about his health moving forward, though.
Yes. I mean, we've talked about just the factors, the age and health conditions. He's a big guy, but just the fact that he has not looked particularly well all year. Started it in camp, and it's continued. So when that kind of bulletin came out after the game, you're like, anytime something like it, you're like, whoa, whoa, really? But I wasn't, what? I was like, eh. No, I wasn't stunned.
Tito, I'm trying to remember, the Indians manager.
Terry Francona.
Is not finishing the year, and he has battled health problems for a number of years and have been out at times from his managing position. This is the first time this has happened for Andy Reid, so I certainly don't want to jump to any kind of conclusion. He has never missed any other days. We know he's had knee surgery in the off season and things like that, but we've never seen him miss games because of health reasons. So I think the man deserves, you know, first of all, our patience. And this is the first time anything like this has come up.
Yeah.
But, you know, the older you get, the more it becomes a question, you know, for him. But he's back. That's good news. Hopefully he's back at full capacity as well. That's the other thing we're going to see. Is he just kind of hanging around the office and he's been told to take it easy? If that's the case, then he wasn't just dehydrated.
Right. Yes.
Can we all agree on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you what you heard there from Travis Kelce was, I mean, there are a few coaches or managers that I can recall in the history of any sport that have – the universal respect and affection from their players, the way Andy Reid does with this group.
Yeah.
That's apparent.
I talked about that today with the Tiger Club as well, that, you know, one of the things, like, you know, he said, oh, is he a great guy for you guys to work with? I said, yeah, he's not bad. You know, we don't get a whole lot from him. They said, what's he really like away from the cameras? I said, well, he's definitely in control. I think the one thing that people would be surprised if they saw the behind the scenes is, you know, he's like, he's a godfather walking around that place, right? And I say that as not a term like he's mean. I mean that in the sense that everybody minds their P's and Q's when he comes around. Mm-hmm. There is a presidential feeling to, you know, maybe that's a better one if you feel better about that. I just mean the way I think godfather is the perfect one, because I think there's a level of fear, not a fear that Andy Reid is going to yell at him or Andy Reid is going to fire him. There's a feel of failing for Andy Reid.
Yeah.
And whatever your job you do, and I think that's healthy for an organization. Nobody wants to let him down. His expectations are high. I think people might be surprised by that. He does have very high expectations. It's not just that he's, you know, some kind of motivational speaker running around giving rah-rah speeches to everybody and everybody rises up to the occasion. You know, he's doing his job. You're expected to do yours.
A professional?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to pump you up. You should do your job.
Now, I will say this. He comes back to a last-place football team. I think that is temporary. Travis Kelce talking about that on ESPN this morning. Talked about what it's like to be, for the first time in a long time, like in his tenure ever, last place in the AFC West.
It's not a position that we wanted to be in or that we had expected to be in, especially with how well we performed in our division the past couple of years. I think, personally, I'm with Pat on this one, man. A little adversity doesn't hurt. I think what it does is it helps mold you as a team and it helps bring guys together. And I'd rather have it earlier than later on in the season. So we're battling through a lot of adversity, kind of trying to figure out what our MO is this year, knowing that every single year you got to recreate the team, reinvent the wheel, and really be a better team than you were previous, knowing how many guys we had come back again this year. And from there, it's just, you know, taking it a game at a time, a day at a time, going to work today, figuring out exactly how we're going to attack the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, it's, like I said, one day at a time, one week at a time. Our division is a great division, so I would assume that, you know, nobody's just going to coast through and win all of their division games. We got a lot of good talent this year and the Raiders and the Broncos and the Chargers, and I just think, you know, it's going to take the whole season to find out who's going to be the divisional winners.
I like Jacoby Brissett. I think he's a tough kid. I wouldn't mind him being the backup quarterback for the Chiefs next year. I'd love to see what Andy Reid could do with him. But he's Jacoby Brissett, and the Raiders needed overtime to beat Jacoby Brissett and a Dolphins team that got destroyed the week before with Jacoby Brissett out there. Now I give the Dolphins every chance. They did, you know, they got to practice and know Brissett was going to play this week. Last week he got thrust in there when Tua went down. But that was their win. The Broncos are 3-0 against three teams that are 0-9.
Yeah, they got the Ravens this week. That's a step up.
Yeah, I definitely think the two teams at the top are going to play back down to them as long as they do their part.
Yeah.
I don't know about Justin Herbert and the Chargers. He looked pretty good, so this may be a dogfight all year long. But I do think that their problems as far as their losses are a lot self-inflicted. Travis Kelce seemed to think the same thing. He said the Chiefs have been their own worst enemy.
You can say all you want about, you know, who we are as a team this year, but we've personally felt like we beat ourselves these past two games with the turnovers, with the mistakes, and it's the entire team. It's not just offense and it's not just defense. It's the entire team. We just got to lock in a little bit more on the little things, and it starts in practice. I don't think that this is a very uncharacteristic play that we've come out the gates with in terms of turning the ball over. And I know we got a lot of guys that it matters to them, right? I said it before. So we'll fix that problem. We'll get it fixed. And hopefully we start playing against the other team instead of playing against ourselves.
I think he's right. I think if they take care of their business, they'll be fine, particularly against the Philadelphia Eagles. If you watched the game last night, I'm not going to say there's nothing to fear here. I think Jalen Hurts can make some plays. I think Devonta Smith's a good player. I think it's an NFL game, but I think the Chiefs get healthy in this one.
Yeah.
I think they lay a beat down. Spread's gone from 6 to 7.5. At least last time I looked, it was Chiefs by 7.5. I'm going to go to the well again. I'll be on the Chiefs minus the points. They haven't covered in a long, long time, but I think they get back to covering. And I think I agree with what Kelsey, and he agreed with what Mahomes said. A little adversity, I think, is going to do this team well. Eric Eager said pretty much the same thing today.
Hurts can run the ball a little bit, but he's not Lamar Jackson, and nobody else on that team seemingly can run the ball. They had some good rushing yards in their season opener, but the Falcons are not very good at either. So that seems to be a pretty easy offense to control. And as we saw, I think the Cowboys, there's two big major running backs, 28 for 155, five and a half yards a clip.
Zeke Elliott hadn't been very good before last night.
He looked like almost primetime Zeke, and the other guy was pretty good as well. When a major factor of that loss was something that the team has never done. That game is never going to happen again. And if they could have been 3-0 on giveaway takeaway and still won against a team that made almost zero mistakes. That game Sunday was such. There were some things that you think were probably going to continue. Defense being a problem. The red zone defense isn't going to be great, but it won't be a 12 out of 13 from opponents. They're going to get a little bit better, and there's no way they're going 4-0 again.
We mentioned the Monday Night Football, the Cowboys winning big. The Manning cast was back. Did either of you watch a single second of the Manning cast?
Hell no.
I watched a little bit early until once they went to their first guest, and I can't think of who the guest was. It wasn't LeBron. It was Matthew Stafford. When they brought him on, I changed it because it's impossible to follow. It's much harder to follow when there's three of them, and I cannot follow the game at all. When I'm watching them, and this is a game I wanted to follow because the Chiefs are playing the Eagles next, so I didn't watch anything past that. Once I went to the regular game broadcast, I just stayed there.
Not a second. Didn't flip over once. Forgot it was on. I think ESPN, I think the fact that they're not pushing it hard, they pushed it a couple of times, but they're not pushing it like they were. I think people at ESPN are going, what do we got here?
Well, and I even wonder, with them taking a few weeks off upcoming, I mean, what is that going to do with no continuity?
I think they may have been by design. Let's see what we got here, and then let's then circle the wagons and see what do we need to tweak.
Yeah.
So I'm probably more intrigued by what they come back with after the break.
Yeah. The one thing I thought was funny when Eli got up and did the Dak hip shifting thing. It was kind of funny. It's like, what the hell is he? But that's one of those things.
I did not think that was funny. Everybody's kind of done that. So yeah. It's the first time that was on video. I've seen that a million times from a million people.
But that's one of those. I think it's one of those things where you just watch the highlights because the funniest bits are going to be on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Go find them there and watch the game.
On the unwatched Manning cast, at least by most of us last night, LeBron James said the Cowboys and Seahawks reached out to him during the 5-month NBA lockout back in 2011.
Jerry Jones offered me a contract. Also, Pete Carroll did as well in Seattle during our lockout time. And it definitely got my blood flowing again, got my mind racing again, thinking about the game of football, being out there on Sundays. But, we was able to get a deal done in the NBA, and I was back on the court in no time. But I definitely thought about it. I still got the jersey, too. That Jerry and Pete Carroll sent me from 2011.
Don't kid yourself. If he wanted to play, he could have gone out there. He may have thought about it, and he quickly got it out of his mind. Mm-hmm. They were locked out through December.
Yeah.
Timing just didn't work out. I was almost ready to pull the trigger.
Yep.
That being said, I would love to see LeBron out there catching passes.
They showed some of his high school shots. You just like, he's, at that time, he's probably, I think he was 6'8", but you're just like, what? How do you... How do you stop that?
Kelsey this morning said he'd gladly welcome LeBron to KC.
Yeah, no, the invitation for LeBron to come to Tight End U is open, man. It's there. I got him a seat right next to me if he wants to come. We'll show him a little bit what it takes, but I think LeBron would fit and match perfectly in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform playing the tight end position, man. That guy can move, man. I remember watching him in high school basketball, just going down to Cleveland State watching, because he used to fill out stadiums left and right, so they moved his games to bigger arenas. And watching him in high school just be an athlete and play basketball was one thing, man. But to see all those highlights of him in high school and his dominance on the field, man, it makes you wonder whether or not he could really do it. But I would love to see it happen.
He could absolutely do it.
Yes.
This isn't like the backup DN from Baylor that's trying to make this thing go.
Yeah, Rico Gathers or whoever the guy is now that's trying it.
This is arguably the greatest athlete in the world. He could do it.
Yeah. When you watch him go from one end of the court to the other with the ball, the speed, the agility, and then that power, I mean, you see it 50 times a year probably. It's just it's breathtaking to watch him. That's something that no one has ever been able to do at that level.
Richard Sherman's going to work out for the Bucs, so he could be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer before long. The NFL is stressing the importance of symptom reporting to prevent the spread of COVID-19. They've got a new video out. Features Pete Carroll, John Harbaugh, and Ron Rivera, along with Andy Reid, to try to get awareness that, hey, don't just fight through it. Let them know I got a symptom and stay home. Maybe it's something we can all take a piece of advice from. And the Lions have released inside linebacker Jamie Collins. So know that. Noah Syndergaard will make his return to the mound for the first time in about 2 years, as he's been trying to work his way back from Tommy John surgery. So he's going to get a start in tonight. And UFC fighter John Jones pulled a woman's hair and headbutted a police car hours after one of his fights was inducted in the UFC Hall of Fame last week. An arrest report released today by the Las Vegas Metro Police Department lays out the sequence of events that led to Jones being arrested Friday morning on two charges, injury and tampering to a vehicle, that's a felony, and a misdemeanor battery domestic violence charge. Jones released Friday evening on $8,000 bail and is due back in court on October 26th. He is just never, ever seemingly going to get things cleaned up in his life. And
there's no reason to think he ever will.
No, and that's scary. We'll take a break. Speaking of scary, Alec Lewis. Uh-huh. Talk about an imposing individual. From The Athletic joins us next. We'll talk a little Royals baseball.
The Program with Soren Petrov.
I'm a fat ass with a microphone.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. As a boy growing up in Alabama, he dreamed of going to school at Missouri. Really?
What? I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
Okay. Now he covers the Royals. He's Alec Lewis of The Athletic on The Program.
Talking Royals baseball here, Alec Lewis in the program from The Athletic. You just heard that. Big voice guy told you that much. He's brought to you by our friends at Hen House. If you're going to tailgate, be it these last six Royals games or, of course, Arrowhead, college football. Friday Night Lights, Hen House is your one-stop shop for everything you need. Hit the delicatessen for dips and sandwiches. Even get in there, grab some chicken fingers for the kids. You can get the whole dinner right there if you want. Head over to Harry's Brewery, stock up on the national and craft beers. If you're going to do some grilling, get back to the meat counter. Always great specials. Find them online at henhouse.com. Alec, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Seren. I'm here at the park. If they turn on the music, you're not going to be happy with me. But no, I'm here watching Cleveland take batting practice with six games remaining in this season.
Nobody likes passive-aggressive actions, Alec. I'm just going to tell you that right up front, okay?
I know. I've learned that. I've learned that through the years. I apologize.
Let's throw that right out there. We'll get that out of the way, okay?
All right.
3-3 is what it will take the Kansas City Royals to get above the 73.5 win total that a number of different individuals here at our office have. Do they get there?
Oh, yeah, I think they do. I think the way that Mike Matheny has operated in the second half is that they've wanted to win every single game, and that being the case, I think they will get three. It's going to be tougher because Carlos Hernandez has kind of been shut down. He's not going to start anymore. There's nothing. It's just innings limit thing. It's not like anything popped up. He feels great. But not having him start, he's been probably your best starter down the stretch. It's going to hurt the three-win hope, but I think I'll lean towards it. Andrew Benintendi's been really, really good. Salvi is who he is, and there's enough there, I think, to beat Cleveland and round this thing out with three.
I'll get to the Salvador Perez home run chase here in a minute, but what do you think about the way the pitching's finishing up? You mentioned Hernandez. Maybe they would like to have given Coar a little break because it has not been pretty for him to finish. How much concern should there be?
Oh, I think there should be plenty of concern because, I mean, it's just been fastball command that's really gotten him. I mean, he when he can't even get it anywhere close to the zone, he's walking guys, and then when he gets it anywhere close to the zone, it's in the middle of the plate. And these guys, these big league hitters, are going to crush those pitches. At times in the minor leagues, you can get away with those, but he's obviously not going to here. And I don't know how easy it is to just refine command over an offseason. He mentioned yesterday that even he was frustrated and that there's going to be a plan this offseason. But, I mean, until he shows better command like that you're going to see from these Cleveland pitchers these three games this week, it's just going to be hard to – it's hard to believe that he can start consistently at this level and succeed, even with the changeup that he has. It's been a really tough stretch. It's been for him, obviously, as I mentioned, it's been tough for him too. But yeah, he's got to figure some things out. I mean, I think in terms of the other guys, Carlos Hernandez has obviously been the most impressive. Daniel Lynch has been inconsistent. Brady Singer has still not thrown a third pitch, but he's succeeded with the two others for now. And so Jonathan Heasley's been pretty good, but it's his first cup of coffee here. So an interesting kind of table of sides with certain guys, and it'd be interesting to see kind of how things move forward.
You know, you had to do it, didn't you? You know, couldn't just have a nice. Well, Brady Singer is succeeding.
I said for now.
Well, what is that? What's the for now? Like his last couple of starts, or what he's doing is acceptable based upon how long he's been in the big leagues? What does the for now qualifier mean?
Well, I think I meant mostly that he's in the short-term recency of his last probably two or three starts. You like that? Short-term recency. Point that right here.
Yeah.
I think for now is he has succeeded with those two pitches in these last three starts. I think I say that thinking forward, as Mike Matheny also did today. At some point, I think to be able to get through a lineup three times consistently as a starter at the big league level against these hitters, you need a third pitch. Now, his changeup that he throws with his arsenal, I don't think is the third pitch that's going to be most successful. So either he refines that changeup this offseason or he finds something else. But this is another year, like we talked about, of him not developing that third pitch. And that's tough when that's probably the most important thing that needs to happen. But I will say, and I wrote this morning, you kind of compare and contrast with these Cleveland starters. And the thing that I think is somewhat important to think about is, like, these Cleveland young starters that come up and have success, there is already a foundation of big league starters to where they get enough time in the minor leagues to develop. Brady Singer was thrust into the big leagues maybe earlier than would have been best for him and his arsenal because the Royals weren't willing to pay or go sign a bevy of other veteran starters. And so it's just he hasn't probably had the development time a guy would need, but I'm not saying this to take the organization off the hook. I mean, they got to figure out a way to develop him anyway, and he has to want to do that himself to be the player that you draft in the first round.
Do you know how many starting pitchers? Let me look here, see who else they list. How many of their starting pitchers have less hits than innings pitched?
How many starting pitchers?
And they list eight guys. Mike Minor, Brad. I'm going to list eight guys for you. Mike Minor, Brad Keller, Brady Singer, Chris Bubich, Daniel Lynch, Danny Duffy, Carlos Hernandez, and Jackson Coar. I'm sure somebody else made a start in there. You know, Irvin Santana did. He made a couple. Jacob Junis made a few. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about guys that started, you know, were kind of an anchor guy at some point, or were hoped for anchor guys. How many of them had less hits than innings pitched?
less hits than innings pitched, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I have a guess.
I don't think any.
Okay, you'll say zero. That's gonna be correct. No, actually three. But what's kind of discouraging is it's Mike Minor, Danny Duffy, and then a guy that they always seem to bump, Chris Bubich.
Yeah.
Like, you know, having fastball command or command of any kind is what they talk about, but never what they reward. Right? They go buy it on the open market or they hang on to it with the veteran and Danny Duffy. And, by the way, the ERAs, 505, 539, 472, 452, 540, 251, that's Duffy, 368, Hernandez, and 1128. I understand that there are more advanced metrics, and everybody who's, you know, never seen a gray hair on their head wants to immediately run to whichever one they can find that seems to validate somebody. The 4.02 fielding independent pitching of Brady Singer should be paid more attention to than the 4.72. At some point, those indicators of the guy being better than what he is need to actually result in that. I mean, I know wins aren't a great stat, but part of the reason why this club doesn't win a lot of games is because their starters don't win a lot of games.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I mean, there's
a correlation between their crappy record and the team's crappy record, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, and Dayton Moore has talked about this for a long time. I mean, starting pitching sets the tone. And so, obviously, if you talk about that, then your job is to develop and draft and scout the starting pitchers that are going to allow you to be successful. And, I mean, I brought up Cleveland earlier, but it's so interesting. I was talking to Zach Mazel, who covers the Cleveland for us at The Athletic, and he was just kind of talking about how they draft pitchers. And they draft a lot of command guys and then develop the velocity in the arsenal, whereas the Royals in recent years have seemed to draft more guys with stuff and then try to develop the command. And it's obviously still to the point in this season where we talk about command and how it doesn't exist with a lot of these guys every day. So it seems to be a philosophy, and I think like the Asa Lacy selection showed it. I think the Brady Singer selection showed in some sense, but they like guys with the potential stuff to make them potential aces. But I mean, I think the Cleveland has proven you can find aces with command if you know how to develop velocity and arsenal. I think I was talking to a Royal staffer the other day, pitching staffer, and they were, I mean, they explained it like this. I mean, you got to have some form of stuff, deception, and execution. And the Royals obviously don't have enough of that combination with some of these guys to where they've been successful enough, because they haven't. I mean, Chris Bubich, like we mentioned, I mean, he's shown some stuff in this last month, like in terms of just his deception and how far he can take a game, that's impressive. And he's shown the command that I think you have to have to succeed at this big league level. But other guys have not. I mean, it'd be lying to say so.
Just to have some more fun with this game, I'm going to, in a random order, give you the one-loss record. Right? We know wins and losses, again, aren't the most telling thing. But I do think it's of note, because when you hear this, I think it does kind of paint a little bit of a picture. 0-5. 6-2, 6-6, 4-3, 4-6, 5-10, 8-12, 8-12. There were three 500 or better, one of which was 500, two that were above 500. Care to tell me who those three were?
Danny Duffy.
4-3.
Man.
It's the same eight guys.
Maybe?
No, it's the same eight guys. I didn't have them in it. It's a combination of Minor, Keller, Singer, Bubich, Lynch, Duffy, Hernandez, and Coar.
Bubich, maybe?
Bubich is correct. He is 6-6.
Who's the 6-2? Man.
You tell me.
It can't be Mike Minor, I don't think.
8-12.
Jeez. Brad Keller? No way.
Well, he's the guy that I was thrilled that was going to make you look real good. No, it's not Brad Keller. He's 8-12 also.
I'm having a hard time. I don't know. I might need help.
Carlos Hernandez, 6-2.
There you go. Obviously. Yeah, obviously.
Does it sound familiar? Because it's the same guys who give up less hits than innings pitched. It's the same guys that can command the baseball. Right?
Yeah.
Like, good things come in that part. So when everybody poo-poos away to these advanced metrics, and I like them as much as anybody, but there are some. Whip and innings and hits per inning, walks per inning, strikeouts per inning, strikeouts to walks. I know those aren't sexy and they're not advanced and they don't take a scientific calculator to figure them out, but they're still really good indicators of who can and who can't.
Yeah, I mean, as Mike Matheny talks about every day, we talk about fastball command. And as much as, I mean, even in the industry, you talk, I mean, people and pitching staffers talk so much about developing arsenals, it does seem to come back to if you can locate your fastball and other pitches, you're going to have success. I don't know if throughout the minors, if you can obviously blow stuff past guys, then you can succeed and look like big-time prospects. But I think at this level, what I've found, I think as well as these young pitchers and hopefully the Royals organization has found too, is that if you can't command and locate the ball at this level, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. And your numbers that you're really spitting out with precision here, and I'm enjoying it, back that up as well.
We're talking to Alec Lewis here in the program. So what do they do this offseason? Right? Because right now, when you don't perform the things that seemingly should be necessities, things you should figure out on the way up, there is no penalty except for Chris Bubich, who to me is the guy who actually earns the most looks a lot of the times, but yet is the first guy pushed out. What do they do? Do they go out and get an ace in this offseason? I know you wrote a piece recently about some of the things they need to look at. Is that what they do? Is they go grab a top of the rotation guy?
I think it's possible, depending on just their flexibility from a payroll perspective. And I think it would benefit just some of these young guys to have another guy who knows how to kind of teach and share thoughts the way that, I mean, like Mike Clevenger did for Shane Bieber, like Shane Bieber did for Zach Plesac. I mean, Cleveland's pitching factory is probably the standard of the industry. And I think part of the reason it's been so successful is that they have older guys who pass down certain things. I think that's why the Royals thought Mike Minor might fit this year, and obviously he's given them a certain amount of innings and was just average, kind of probably as expected. But I think going to get another guy, be it through free agency or through a trade, I think would kind of take it to the next level. I mean, I think that's a focal point. I think they probably want to shore up the bullpen a little bit. And then I think – on the offensive side, you just have questions about where guys are playing in the infield and what they do in center field. And I think those are, from a position-by-position standpoint, that's the most important. There's stuff to look at with everything, really. If the team wants to continue to improve, they got to improve every facet of it.
The whispers are that MJ Melendez is going to be an outfielder at least part-time next year. Do you agree with that?
Where are those whispers coming from?
Well, one of them was from Jeff Passan.
Oh, well, Jeff knows this stuff pretty well, so probably better than anybody else in the world. So, I think that's possible, whether it's the outfield, whether it's third base at times, whether it's even first base. I don't know if it's so set to where it's just the outfield, but if his bat's ready, and, I mean, he's hit 41 home runs at Double A and Triple A this year and shown power numbers per ISO that are better than really I think anybody since 2006. So it seems like the bat's pretty ready. You got to find a spot for him. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And I think, you look at certain things with Carlos Santana playing the way he has. Maybe that means you move Dozier into first base and maybe MJ starts in right field. I think that could make sense. I think you could maybe put MJ in right field and have Dozier DH. I think again, if the bat's ready, and I think it is. If not close, ready with he and Bobby and Nick Prado, you got to find a way to get him in the lineup if you're really trying to compete, or else you're not.
How does the Nicky Lopez, Adalberto Mondesi, Bobby Witt Jr., Whit Merrifield combination come together next year?
Oof, it's tough. I think it's going to be really – I mean, I think just contentious in the clubhouse in a sense that, I mean, Nicky Lopez – has proven that he can play everyday shortstop and hit 300 and I think be a winning piece on a championship team. And then I know Whit Merrifield loves to play second base. So to move those guys around, I think would be really tough. But then you ask the question of where does Adalberto Mondesi go? And I think my answer to your original question would be that Bobby Witt Jr. plays third base. Nicky Lopez plays shortstop. Whit Merrifield plays second base. And Adalberto Mondesi bounces around as kind of a super utility type. I think that's the way to go, unless they decide to move Mondesi to shortstop and then have him play about 80 games there and maybe fill in with Nicky Lopez. I think it's probably one or the other. But I think I don't think anything's been decided. I really don't.
All right, so that's your impression. That's not the impression you've been given by people in the organization.
No, that was me speculating about the options. Yeah, no, that was, I don't need any aggregating going on with that at all.
Do they make a trade this offseason?
I think it's possible. I mean, if you want to acquire an everyday center fielder type, I mean, you have a bevy of pitching. If other teams are really desperate for pitching, maybe it's possible to unload some of those guys and acquire a center fielder. I don't know if that'd be like a Jaron Duran type from the Red Sox. I don't know if like the Angels obviously desperately need pitching. I don't know if Joe Adell can play center field here, but to me that would be some kind of fit in some way. So I think that would be the most likely situation. I mean, MJ Melendez, as I just mentioned, obviously Salvi's catching and wants to catch as much as possible, but I think he also realizes the benefit of DH, and I think if he's going to continue to DH the way he has, if not more, you want a capable catcher, and to have a guy with the power of MJ Melendez at catcher is a bonus that no other team has. So I just can't see them moving him unless the offer is perfect. But again, it's all dependent on how these other teams value the Royals players and if they value them as highly as the Royals seem to.
I have not had any frustrations really with Mike Matheny. Part of it was because I knew that this team wasn't ready, and so worrying about which guy he threw was not something that it's not like he had a full arsenal, right? You know, all the chambers weren't loaded. Next year, we'll see what the front office does, but they ought to be at a point where all the chambers are loaded. I'm not going to say he's like fighting for his job, because I don't think that's it. I think he goes into next year with the full confidence of the organization. But for me, it's time to start grading how he does. Let's see what happens if they somehow, you know, move Benintendi and don't replace him, and it's Isbell and Olivares and Hunter Dozier slapping around out in the outfield. That's not filling the chambers, and it gets harder to judge him. But assuming that they finish this team off, I do think this is a good parallel to 2012, where in that offseason after 12, they went out and got Wade Davis and James Shields. I think this time it's a center fielder, or they're going to have to move Mondesi or somebody out to center field. I think it's time to finish this team off and to go out and contend and give your best shot. You may come up short, as they did in 13, but it's time to go do that. Is it time to now start evaluating Mike Matheny like a regular manager that there are expectations for?
Yeah, I think next year that's where that really begins. And I think you're right in the sense that he's handled everything well. I think from a clubhouse perspective, he's been very intense, and I think that's been somewhat of a departure from the end of Ned Yost's tenure here, probably more than just somewhat. But I think that's what these guys want, and he and his staff has been responding to that. I think as you think forward to next season, for sure, like you say, load the chamber and have guys in spots that can lead to, I don't know if it's an 80-85 win team, a team that's very capable. I think it definitely needs to be evaluated, as does the entire coaching staff. I mean, I think some of the relationships exist, and relationships is everything with some of these coaches and what they want to get across. But I mean, if you look at like the San Francisco Giants this year, a lot of people attribute their success to the coaching staff and how forward-thinking, communicative it is, and obviously that's a newer staff. So I think it all needs to be evaluated. I think it is. I mean, I remember talking to John Sherman after the All-Star break or around the All-Star break, and he talked about how they just can't quit developing guys and when they arrive at the big league level. And I think as like Bobby Witt arrives and as Nick Prado and MJ Melendez arrives, how that interaction happens with these coaches they haven't worked with is going to be interesting to kind of watch and follow. And I think Mike Matheny is obviously included in that.
Jed says it's time for the Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. So let's get to it, Alec. I'll start you with this. Salvador Perez's home run total at the end of the season is what?
So we've got six games left. I've said 50 from the get-go. I asked him on the field about 10 minutes ago if he was going to hit one tonight, and he said yes, of course. So that'll put him at 47. And I think I'll keep it at 50. Four in the last six. Why not? put fireworks to the finish.
Okay. I'd like to point out, Alec, you've been on the phone with us for 21 minutes.
Yeah,
no. All right. Well, 30 minutes ago, time is not of the essence in a 162-game season.
There you go. Well said. Well put. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Salvador Perez, and believe me, he's got a pipe. Salvador Perez, his home run total for his career will be?
What is he at now?
198. Wait, thanks for staying up on things, buddy. That's like so unfair to like expect, like, because you're the beat writer, you should know everybody's career total.
I'm not like surfing Baseball Reference Hall of, I don't know, 365.
365, okay. I'll take it. That's actually a pretty good answer. Well done. All right, what are you streaming right now? You got any shows you're watching?
Well, first, you said that's actually a pretty good answer, as if all the other ones were actually terrible answers, so I appreciate that.
Not all of them, just most.
Okay, thanks. That's great. Ted Lasso, unbelievable show.
Yep, good job. Ted Lasso is a good show. Is season two going well? I've been waiting. My wife says she wants to watch it, but getting her to watch anything on television is a Herculean effort, and I'm clearly not Hercules.
I'm on season one. I want all the episodes to be there so I can binge it. I don't know if that's a weird thing, but I've heard. Yeah. I just think the show's better if I can just go and don't have to wait.
Yeah, that's what I did with season one. I saw it after all of them were out, and it is really good. I haven't seen season two yet, but I like the answer. All right, and finally, you're from Alabama. The next head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide after Nick Saban walks away is who?
That's a really good question. Mario Cristobal.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow. Tell me why. I like that.
I don't know. I think he's sharp. He was obviously under Saban as, I think, the offensive line coach. I think he's been pretty good at Oregon. I think it makes sense to me in my head.
Okay. Well done. Defended the answer. I like that. Alec, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll let you get back to the ball game. Look forward to number 47 flying over the fences tonight, and we will talk with you again next week, my friend.
Perfect, sir, and thanks for the time. You guys stay well, and hopefully I'll have better than actually pretty good answers next week.
I hope so as well, for your sake, really, to be honest. Alec, you're the man. Take care, buddy. Alec Lewis from The Athletic does a great job covering the Royals. Check out his great work at The Athletic. A lot of great content there. If you're a Royals fan, you're probably already watching his great work there at The Athletic. Following him on the Twitter, he does a great, great job. We'll take a break, come back, wrap things up with the kicker. You know, sometimes some people that you can't figure out get awards that just don't seem to be really what anybody else thinks they should get. And that happened here recently. We'll talk about it next here in the kicker.
The program with Soren Petro.
You might want to hold off on that just for a minute. Just hold on. We can't hear. All right.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sentence into the hour answer. DeSean Jackson, fifth player in the Super Bowl era to have 10 touchdowns of at least 75 yards. I asked for any of the other four who have done it. One is active.
Tyreek Hill.
He has 10.
I don't know. It's
Josh Cribbs, Dante Hall.
Oh, wow.
And the all-time leader, Devin Hester, with 14, a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year.
And we were playing for
Good Sense.
Good Sense. Get it right now, GoodSenseSubs.com. The app, the easiest way to order, and, of course, you get 10% back when you're part of that loyalty club. Great KC company founded right in Lenexa. It's Good Sense. Explain this to me. Bryson DeChambeau is going to receive the SMU, where he went to school, their Emerging Leader Award on September 30th. At a distinguished alumni award dinner. I have no doubt that the man is a distinguished alum of SMU, but an emerging leader. He's known as one of the biggest horses' asses on the PGA Tour. He does nothing on camera to dispel that idea, yet SMU is going to call him an emerging leader. Like, I get it. You want to give it to somebody famous. I get it. He's a distinguished alum. But really? You're going to give that guy there isn't anybody out there, even if they're not famous, you could give this award to?